Good morning. We would like to call to order the Groveland Community Services regular board meeting for March 14th, 2023 at 10:01 a.m. We'll start by taking the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Rachel, do you want to take roll call?
Director Morant. Director Kwiatkowski is absent. Director Armstrong.
Here.
Director Edwards.
I'm here.
And Director Swan.
Present.
For present, one absent.
All right. It's okay for the, if you have any public people. The members of the public are appreciated for taking the time to attend this meeting and provide comments on matters of district business. Public comments are subject to a 3-minute time limit, 10 minutes on any individual topic. Although no action can be taken on items not listed on the agenda, please know we are listening carefully to your comment. And I'm not sick. We're just going out of town in a week, so I don't want to get sick. Just FYI, I think that he's like,
protected from others.
Be here or not. Okay. All right, so.
And I would give all of my information about providing public comments. I'll just make note that there are no members of the public on the Zoom platform. And we have members of the public right here. So they can make comments on items as they come up. They can do so. Otherwise, we can take comments in the Zoom platform or by emailing board@gcsd.org.
Okay, so then before we start, we need to do item number one, authorize board of directors to permit Director Kwiatkowski to attend a meeting remotely under AB 2449 emergency circumstances.
And she has actually emailed us and is not attending at all today.
Okay, so we're doing it. That's what I thought, because I didn't email her text. Okay, and then we can ask for a motion to approve the order of agenda.
Make a motion.
Do we want to modify the order of the agenda?
No, I said to you guys, if you want to move item 7C to the top of the discussion and action items.
I personally think we did, so.
Yeah, I think it'd be a good idea. So I move to approve the order to modify the order of the agenda by moving item 7C to the top of the item 7 section. And with that change, to approve the agenda.
I second.
Comment? Nothing. Okay, it was moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong to approve the order of the agenda with the exception of moving item 7C to the top of the order. I'll open the vote again.
Yeah.
Or do I? Because Janice is not here.
I did not, yeah, I wasn't sure. Can we just do it with a unanimous or?
Yeah, I think you can just actually Nancy will chair do all of that.
Okay.
Since we don't have anybody.
Okay.
So perfect. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Okay. Unanimous. All right. So we've already kind of covered the public comments. Just give it go with it. On to the information item starting with the well-represented fire department.
Good morning. Travis Chung, fire captain from the Groveland Fire Department. This is the monthly activity report for the month of February 2023. On February 28th, we had our annual ladder testing completed. All the GCSD ladders passed the testing. We did have our halyards replaced on all the extension ladders. As far as equipment, all equipment is in service and available. In addition to our normal EMT training, we also added Narcan and epinephrine on engine 781. And FAE Patrick Cohen attended common passenger vehicle rescue class. And FAE Rene Herrera attended the continued professional training class. On February 20th, we had the tankless water heater installed that was replacing the 50-gallon tank water heater, which was having a little trouble keeping up with the added people at the station. And this tankless water heater has effectively taken care of that issue.
You're not having any challenges with hot water now?
No.
Good.
Yeah, it's awesome. It just keeps going. Yeah. You
guys could have taken showers.
During the recent snow, we had several areas of the gutters that were damaged due to the snow load on the roof. Louis is aware of this and is pursuing getting a contractor out to address the needs of the gutters. Several pictures there.
They're just every time they've had it.
I know, it's like, we don't, I was going to put gutters on our house, but no, it's
And then as far as the call statistics, 33 calls, 32 of them were in the DCST district. One was in Baldwin County. And as far as call stats, we're a little low as far as the average and year-to-date, a little below average. And that concludes our report, unless there's any questions.
And I'll report on the Tolman County side, Tolman County Fire Department, Maria Torres. Obviously, we received our three Pierce Contender 2009s in January. The guys were working overtime going all to the shop, trying to get those in service by 3-6. Actually happened. The only one we didn't have in service by 3-6 was 5-6-1, which is running on the station 51. So yeah, all three brand new to us. Mm-hmm. 2009 Pierce Contenders are on board. 631 was up here, I think, before 3-4. That is when it actually got put in service. All equipment was put on and everything. So just so everybody knows, that engine's a 3-0 engine. So minimum staffing of 3-0 for 6 years on. So you get one added extra person up here on the hill.
Nice.
So, some other things. Obviously, 631 is also carrying Narcan and epinephrine now as part of our expanded scope for EMTs. So we'll be getting that on board. And then, other than that, just working to hire more personnel. I think we're down three captains and three firefighter twos, maybe soon to be four. That still need to be hired within the next month or two. And
just for the county?
Just for the county.
How's your staffing? I mean, are you getting a lot of people applying for the work?
We have an established list for engineers and firefighter twos. We're still waiting on the captain's list to be vetted. They just took the test about a month or two ago, and it should be coming out in the next week or two to see who passed and who didn't, and then they apply to where they want to go, and then we start making job offers for captains.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys got a good handle on it.
We got a good pool coming up here locally in Tolman Calendars, you know, engineers that are getting ready to transition. So pretty excited about that.
Good. Outstanding. Well done,
Randall. Did we have trouble getting around the last couple weeks?
No, not really.
Really?
We just ran into some private roads that were not plowed.
Yeah.
And if the call was down that private road, we had to hike in. Nice. Which would pose, you know, some issues, but just do the best we can.
Wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
Could have been worse. I saw a lot of Cal Fire guys shoveling snow off roofs in Tahoe.
Yeah.
And we do have that going on in the county also. There's two county engines that are applied, or they're put in with OES as part of the OES strike team. They've been banded together basically since not this last Wednesday, the Wednesday before. And they're repositioned here in Fulton County. They're doing snow removal, pitch digouts, structure fires, and emergency response. On that strike team's Miwok district, two engines from Fulton and Columbia. So
you got a handle on it.
Yeah.
Right. Thanks. You get much better than that. We see the light.
Well, I hope you're right. Fun spot, but now I got wet.
Except for this next spot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's
yes.
Okay. Thank you, all of you, for everything you do every single day. On to the CERT report with Bob.
Thank you. By the way, it could be worse. I've seen a lot of pictures with friends up in Yosemite. There are parts of the park on the valley floor that got 15 feet of snow.
You're kidding.
Yeah. Oh, they're not quite ready to open. They have to find buildings. They're actually have a picture of a ranger with a metal detector trying to find her car in a snowbank.
Oh,
I saw that one.
Anyway, sir, some good news this month. At the request of Tuolumne County OES, we helped operate the warming center and shelter in conjunction with the Red Cross at the Resilience Center. And that was about 4 days on a 24/7 basis. So there have to be two people there all the time. And we were typically the second person. So I did not receive a lot of visitors. I had one person stayed overnight. Contrast that to the Tuolumne Center, which had about a dozen staying overnight. Part of it had to do with a larger homeless population in and around Sonora. But we did have a number of people drop by to charge their phone. The picture we'll always remember for me is there was a young couple that came in about an hour after we opened it. And we set up a table and chairs for them, and they went over and sat on the floor over there by the plug, plugged in their laptops, and about 3 hours later said thank you and left. So, you know, that's called public service. They incidentally had moved here from Florida in January. Welcome to California. We have ordered and received, because of our shopping expert, all of the items from the $3,000 grant that we got from Tuolumne County Health Care and Safety Coalition. So we just have to put the shelves together in our storage locker and inventory the items. We plan to put the inventory into a Google Sheet so that you guys have access to it as well. We have CERT training coming up. April 21, 22, 23 at the Tuolumne County Emergency Operations Center. We have a number of people from here that have expressed an interest in that, so we're waiting for the list of people that actually are going to be part of that. We have the report was 4 to 6 candidates. We've now got about 9, so we'll see what can fit in. GCERT is conducting a first aid AED CPR training March 18 in the Resilience Center. So that's next Saturday. And I'd like to invite any of you guys that would rather hang out in the Resilience Center than the station, come and join us. We won't charge you. The class, incidentally, is the instructor for the class is our Tuolumne County OES coordinator, Tori Beeks, and her husband, Mark. So when I asked him, he's the principal instructor, if he could do this class, he said, talk to the boss. So he's well-trained. The evacuation maps that we prepared, is that something that we can put on the website for GCSD? Do I need to send those to you, or do you have those? There are 3 evacuation maps. Therefore, the county has prepared them. Mm-hmm. The county fire, OES, and the sheriff have all blessed them. So there's the east side of Pine Mountain Lake, the west side of Pine Mountain Lake, and then there's a regional map that covers once you've got out of Pine Mountain Lake, where do you go then? So is that, can you?
It is, yeah. I put the word out there to try to get that documentation that it's been accepted or blessed by the powers that be, because that's kind of the world that we live in,
right.
And I haven't received that back.
Okay,
it's been just crickets, and I'm not sure why.
Was that a month ago,
yeah,
or so? So I thought we did get the blessing, but let me just retract those emails, and then I will forward it to both of you guys, because I think we got the go ahead.
And so we'll just, yeah.
Absolutely. Good. We are planning a workshop on March 25. That's 2 Saturdays from now. The CHP will come here, and run CERT through traffic control. So we've done this before with the Twain Park, and so we're going to be using this for a classroom, and we use the driveway out here for practice. So again, any of you guys that want to attend are more than welcome to. April 28th, CERT is going to offer a personal preparedness workshop at the Little House. It's going to be tailored for their clients. So instead of being 3.5 hours that some of the board members have been through, it will be 90 minutes. And it'll be really targeted towards the older citizens in the area of what they need to do, who they need to be in touch with, how they need to get help. And incidentally, along that lines, we're partnering with the Little House and OES to create a list of people that will need help in an emergency. And unlike what happened with the mock fire evacuation, where people were scrambling around to find out who knew what, this will be out on the cloud, and it'll be accessible to OES, it'll be accessible to us, and it'll be accessible to the Little House. So they'll name who the people are, where they're located, what are the special needs that they have, whether it's transportation or hearing or blind or whatever it happens to be. So we're looking forward to that. We finally got the format approved for the spreadsheet, all the columns that we need. CERT will be making a presentation April 19th to the Rotary Club. They want to know about CERT. So we'll tell them about CERT. And that's it.
First of all, I want to thank everybody for working at the Resilience Center, because that was really nice. And I was actually going to even ask you with this list you just mentioned, to me sounds like a great idea. We just stopped down there once we got plowed out just to see how many people were there and to thank the people who were there. And I commented to them, whether they passed it along to you or not, several of the comments that I saw on like next door were how is anybody supposed to know that it's even open, and you know, this and that and whatnot. And we kind of were just chatting while we were there, wondering if the minimal number of people that showed up were people who couldn't get there, you know. So this list would be helpful for something like that too, you know, if it's a matter of those who could get out, or if you had the type of vehicle that you could go pick people up if they're sitting in a cold house with no power.
The Little House owns that vehicle. It's the Wave Bus, and they've got actually a second vehicle. So, and that's a problem. I mean, I come from a world of PR and public relations and notification of people and getting the word out. And Pawnee County does an incredibly poor job of that. There's sandbags right now available, and because of a grant they got from, I think it was the state, they're preloaded sandbags. So you don't have to bring your own bags. You don't need a shovel. You just pick up the bag and put it in the car. And what was posted on social media was press release from Tuolumne County. That's it. That's what people see above the fold. And I don't know how to amplify that other than to jump up and down to the people that post that. But the link took you to the Pawnee County website, which read a little citation about this is an emergency and blah, blah, blah. And then you have to click another link to go find out where you get the sandbags. It's terrible. So I try to do as much as I can with social media, but I think that, Nancy, that's one of the problems, that people didn't know that it was open. I'm going to buy the Resilience Center a feather, you know, those big things that go, it says open, so they can put it out on the street when it's open. I mean, it's you put your finger on a problem here. People, not everybody around here reads social media.
That's right.
It's also the way that it came about, the opening of the center. It was It was a last minute thought, probably brought on by public pressure or political pressure that you've got this big building here. Why don't you open it? And so it happened basically overnight. Louie and I and the guys were, you know, them on the tractor, me on the shovel, trying to get it open by 6 o'clock when we heard about that at 3:30 in the afternoon. And they thought that it had been plowed out and there hadn't been a plow anywhere near there. And so it had a foot of snow. And so that's been, so we couldn't even release the notice until we knew we were opening it, and didn't know we were opening it until the next day after we cleared it. it just was an afterthought, unfortunately. And then we put it out on all of our social media venues, and the county did have it out there, but it needed to be out there a week in advance that, hey, we've got a storm upcoming, you know, and then that same consistent message released.
Well, and I think a lot of the negative chatter was also because the Tuolumne County one, or the Tuolumne one, was already open. And, you know, like happens here often, it's like, well, what about us? Why isn't ours open? And theirs had been open for at least a couple day or two, maybe even before ours was. And then what did come out prior to this in the county was a letter basically saying that this didn't meet qualifications for an emergency and for whatever, which I think a lot of people pretty much saw as a slap in the face.
Yeah. You know? I can kind of touch on that. I'm not on the AREP right now for OENS and Cal Fire Open Resources. So our crew is just pretty good at stocking and currently filling those sandbags at Grove, Green, Columbia, and Jamestown, and Tuolumne City. The declaration for the from Governor Newsom didn't come until, I believe, last Wednesday, claiming Tuolumne County as a state of emergency. That's where that extra funding comes in for the bags of sand and everything. So since last Wednesday, our crews have been filling those out daily. I'll touch on what you said on getting that notification out and talking to our groups, which is something we'll receive today. Actually, this one affects. So hopefully that can be mitigated here shortly.
Yeah, there's something in public relations called above the fold. Think of a newspaper. Some of you have probably seen a newspaper. Not so much anymore. Above the fold means that when you pick up a folded newspaper, you read the headline. And
you still call them headlines.
But. Yeah. The point is, it should read sandbags available immediately and then go into the thing.
Bob was talking about buying a feather to put out in front of the resiliency. Can we spring for the feather, GCSD?
No.
No?
No. County building.
Oh, it's a county building?
County
building.
Okay, it's well, just,
I'll do it.
It's the thing, I can just tell you that the county was, the county has not integrated the resilience center operation into their daily lives yet. That's the main thing, is they have been trying so hard to get these things built, putting all of their effort into it, then having delays at the end with, you know, final touches to be able to actually take possession of the building from the contractor. It's not the fault of the county. Yeah. It's just that, you know, when you have a punch list and you have things that can't get done before the weather, then you have weather, everything goes on hold until the weather clears and you can get the work done. And then you can say, yes, we accept this work. Having us occupy it and plow snow and turn that thing on and fire it up and have people there before the contractor's complete is a real risk, because then the contractor just says, no, it wasn't me, you guys, it was Louie on the backhoe. So I very much appreciate the effort of the county and everything else for whatever reason. It just hasn't, public works didn't know that. You know, the county staff at admin and the supervisors didn't know the relationship of the public works folks and what they do, and the building facilities maintenance people and what they do, and it's completely different, and they don't cross over. It's just really interesting.
I have to congratulate Pete and GCSD for stepping up. A long time ago, when I had young teens, 13, 14 years old, you'd say, aren't you supposed to do the dishes tonight? Mm-hmm. And there's an expression I learned from them. It's, oh yeah, huh? And That's what happened here. Pete asked the county if they had plowed the parking lot, and he got an oh yeah, huh. And so Louis brought the crew out there, and they cleaned the parking lot, not once, but twice of snow. And I don't know how you guys did it, because you guys don't have a sander, but the first day that the Resilient Center was open was a sheet of ice in the parking lot. And you guys figured out a way to put sand down on that so people didn't wind up on their keisters. So, you know, thank you. Congratulations, GCSD, for stepping up when it wasn't in your charter. And oh, and one other quick note, Highway 120 had a serious break in it. A hole between Rush Creek and Arden Flat Road at Thousand Trails, and it's almost finished repairing. The nice thing about our state highway is that we've got a big state agency with big bucks that they can spend to fix things. And they were up there. I saw a picture from yesterday morning where they just about got completely filled and ready to put stuff over it.
That's pretty impressive with all this rain.
Make it easier for you guys to run calls to Evergreen Lodge.
All right, is that it?
That's it.
All right, thanks for the report. And again, thanks for all that you do. We will now move on to the Upward Chamber Committee.
I think it's general manager.
I'm not going to add a whole lot to this because we've had so much going on. It's hard to even get down on paper. Primarily the workshop of last week covered a lot of ground, but I do want to just touch base on the we had several committees of CSDA this last week. And of note was primarily the legislative committee I brought in. And Director Swan was also part of that discussion. It's a hot and heavy part of the legislative session right now, and there's a lot of nutsy stuff going on. It's really kind of hard to track just how much legislation that CSDA has to deal with, because some of these things are just so bad because the legislature is so uninformed on the impacts that they have. You know, they're trying to solve a problem. In most cases, they're trying to do a really good job to solve a problem, but they experience a problem in one area and they try to apply it to the entire state with a fix that just, it's just it makes it more expensive exponentially to do our business. And the outcome might benefit one particular segment of the state, and it doesn't always produce the benefit that they want it to. One example is this California Air Resources Board Advanced Clean Fleet. Well, I just can't put my arms around this thing. This is one of those things where the state, the state leaders put out an edict to get something done, and that is to reduce emissions. And I get it. I understand what they're trying to do, and they're going to do it at all costs. But they're going to, in all reality, adopt a regulation in early April. They're going to put the final draft documents out for this Advanced Clean Fleet draft regulation anytime now. There'll be a 15-day comment period, and then it'll be in effect, and it actually takes effect on the first of the upcoming year. So on January 1st of 2024, we're supposed to start the process of purchasing electric vehicles when we purchase vehicles. And that includes things like replacement back-on truck, our backhoes, our dump trucks, our fleet. There are a number of exemptions. We don't completely fit those exemptions. There's some of them. Well, the fire is exempt. Fire is going to be exempt, so it's not going to have to. Somebody did a really good job of lobbying that one.
You can have a lot of burn.
Well, I mean, we're not, I, We'd have to plan on 5 years if we needed a dump truck.
So we're going to change our generators to electric too?
No, we don't have to change anything. Right. We just have to, we have to go to electric in the future. Now, I think what the word is that first off, even though it's going into effect and you're required to do it, the grid is not going to be there to be able to support
no
it.
Way.
And the funding to be able to get in the number of charging stations that we have to get in to be able to service our fleet is going to be another issue. The financing to be able to do it. So I think there's, after it's in place, then CARB has met their
readjustments.
They'll make some readjustments and some extensions and everything else. This is really a shot over the bow to say we're going to do it no matter what. And so just when we are getting our infrastructure in order and we're investing, you know, tens of millions of dollars in our infrastructure, our cost is going through the roof. And this is just going to add another exponent to it. And with no funding in place to take that impact off of our customers. Our customers already don't understand why the rates are what they are. Wait till they see these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, you know, the efficiency of them.
I know nothing about the technology. But there are timelines associated with this. I'm going to continue to look into it as time allows, just because I've got to present it to the special districts, the Tuolumne County Special Districts Association in a month. We have a quarterly meeting, and that's on the agenda because there's a lot of questions about it. I assume probably by the time we have our meeting in a month from now,
more stuff will happen,
but it'll probably be already adopted. Hopefully they just say, no, this isn't going to work. We're going to,
you know, they're not going to do that.
No.
I mean, you know, this is the California Air Resources Board, and because they're an executive branch agency, this is not actually the legislature, although they're implementing stuff that the legislature is legislated on to some extent, but a lot of it is executive branch. And I mean, I'm just, what's going to have to happen is they're going to go ahead and implement it. They're going to have the review period. They're going to say, okay, this is it. And then about a month later, they're going to start saying, well, except.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of this stuff is just impossible in the time frame that's being, you know, I mean, it's not, you can't change reality by executive order. Stuff is just not going to happen. And so then they'll say, okay, fine, here's the revised rules.
So what are they going to do in the summertime when you can't charge your trucks?
You can't charge nobody. I mean, the grid, the thing you alluded to on the grid is, this is even, I think even CARB knows.
Yeah,
already
they do
that there is no possible way to have the charging facilities for the fleets that they're talking about in this time frame. I mean, you can maybe say, okay, you all have to buy an electric vehicle. Well, isn't that you have to replace your existing one? When you replace the vehicle, in the schedule. But if you actually do that, they'll just be sitting there because you won't be able to charge them.
Yeah, last summer we had something like 3 or 4% of the vehicles in California are electric, and they couldn't even handle that.
Yeah, no,
don't charge your.
That is simple. That is just that's physics. I mean, that's just a simple fact.
Yeah.
And so eventually, the California Air Resources Board will have to recognize that because you can't change reality.
Right. 80% of our electricity comes from fossil fuels, so you're not saving anything. It's ridiculous.
So the one of the smallest sections of this regulation deal with infrastructure construction delay extension, and it's not very lengthy, but it says a fleet owner may apply for this extension if they experience construction delays beyond their control on a project to purchase zero emission vehicles and install zero emission vehicle charging and fueling stations. So if PG&E tells us we can't get it in there until 2047. We're going to get an extension until 2047. That's what's going to happen in most of the areas, especially the non-urban areas.
Before you go, there's an agency that is probably worth talking to, and that's TCTC. They have had to do that for their fleet and for their buses.
Yeah.
And so they have been there before you through a different regulation, so they may be a resource. By the way, LA Fire Department has two shiny electric engines.
They took the only two that have been manufactured. I don't
know.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a known garbage trucks. I mean, yeah, everything.
Jill Moore is going to really like that.
Well, he Caltrans is all up in arms if they do. I mean, they.
It's impossible. I mean, it's not a. I think the motivation, if you just want to look at it, is they're saying, okay, we're going to put this regulation in place to get people serious about it, but then we're going to have lots and lots of exceptions because it's impossible.
Run off the cliff with all the other members.
So that, and you know, there are a number of interesting other pieces of legislation. The drone. Who would have ever thought that the state was going to adopt regulations prohibiting the use of drones made in China? Well, yeah. All drones are made in China right now, you know, and that's really an opportunity for an American, made in USA business to pick it up and do it right, because it's going to pass, and that's because of the technology concern, the cyber.
They're going after private drones too.
All, this the current legislation I think is just for public entities.
It's
a cybersecurity concern.
I mean, it's legitimate, wireless cameras.
Except again,
same thing.
There are no non-Chinese made drones.
No, and what about your security cameras? They're all on the internet. Yeah, that's the same thing.
So I don't have a lot of good legislation to talk about. I'd love to end, unless you remember something, Bob, that was just, this is the greatest piece of legislation. The state is still struggling with.
Certainly have good legislation. Context, one of the things about the legislative is just there are 120 state legislators, right? 80 in the assembly, 40 in the Senate. And I'm not sure what this year's limit is, but last year, each of them was permitted to author up to 2,000 bills. Now, most of them don't author 2,000 bills because nobody has that much time. But so there's just an enormous number of bills, and many of them. As near as I can see, we only look at a fraction of them that the CSDA legislative analysis staff thinks is actually worth talking about. A lot of them are kind of like vanity things. I mean, people, so when you're being up for re-election, you can point to all these bills that you authored, even though many of them just never go anywhere, just kind of die in committee or die before committee. But the volume of stuff is just really overwhelming, and some of it is occasionally there's a good one in there someplace, but a lot of them are very, very specific, something to deal with some kind of particular problem in Orange County, part of Orange County, in a small sector of Orange County. It's archaic. We have an archaic legislative system.
When you see a slew of legislation about a particular topic, something's going to happen. So the surplus.
The surplus land act. There must be 100 bills on the surplus land act. Only a couple of which will go anywhere.
So other than that, we appreciate working with CERT. Very much appreciate Bob. You guys did a fantastic job. Always count on you to be there. And that's something that we did work really hard to try to get that open by 6 o'clock that evening. Tuolumne was able to open because they had one Red Cross van and it pulled into Tuolumne first. And then they got the additional Red Cross trailer to get this one opened up. And that's what it took to be able to really fully open it. So we were really open just about half a day after the Tuolumne site.
It was really interesting to see how organized the Red Cross is. They brought a trailer in that had about 50 cots in it. And it's the same trailer. There's thousands of copies of it all around the country. There's a combination lock on it. Every one of them has the same combination. They can pull the trailer from anywhere and go there. We had Red Cross people here from Mendocino and Monterey. The lady that came in and set it up went and said one of her first things after she parked the trailer was to say, where can you get eats? And she went to two guys and said, I'm with the Red Cross. Here's my card. Everything that they charge, I'll pay for. And bless their hearts, two guys said, we won't do it now. Just when we're done, we'll call you and we'll settle up then. Tried to do it at Marvell and ran into some red tape, but they were very well organized. They basically said, this is food for the center. Send it. We'll pay for it. They had people here all the time during the thing. That's a very fascinating thing. And that Tuolumne County OES has a contract with Red Cross. So when it moves from a warming center, which is not open 24/7, to a shelter, which is open 24/7, that's when they call the Red Cross. And they were a tremendous partner.
I'm going to back up a little bit since you were just talking about Naomi, that when you said that there was 4 to 6 people signed up for this, but now you think it's like 8 or 9. Do you know if those 8 or 9 were people that were motivated by all the people on social media saying, well, I'll get certified and help man the center?
Some of them were, exactly. They came in and gave us their name. So when we're deployed, we got to wear the search stuff. And conversely, if we're not deployed, so the deployment in that case went from Dory to Pete to me. If we're not deployed, we don't wear any search stuff, even though we can go do the same stuff we would do. But yes, there were some that did that. And I called to schedule a doctor visit yesterday, and the two people that are running the reception at Dr. Shields' office said, say, I heard about CERT. We want to be that. So
yeah. There were a lot of people, you know, as people were complaining about different things and not knowing it was open, you know, several of them were like, well, if I knew that, I would get certified. I'd get certified. I almost thought I should have been taking the role in the list and saying, contact every one of these people, hold them to their offer. But
that's how it works, because the if you will, the creed or the way CERT operates is that you first have to be sure that you're okay in the case of an emergency. And then the second thing, you have to be sure that your family's okay. And the third thing is, if you have time left over from that, then you go help the community. And with that in mind, it says that what you need is a fairly large pool of people to draw from. So if we want to have 2, 3, 4 there, we need to have a larger pool. So we're growing. And take names next time.
I could probably go back and find it.
You don't have to do the other part, but take names.
Okay, I'm just going to call on Louie. And get I know yourself.
Way to go, Louie.
I'll go.
Okay, Jennifer.
So the airport annexation process that I discussed with the board last month, not a whole lot has changed. We're in the final process and stages of completing that annexation with a tax sharing resolution that needs to be approved by the board of supervisors. I reached out to Debbie Bautista a couple times trying to find some correction, as these don't happen very often and there's not really like a guidebook to do anything. I hadn't heard from her, so Pete ended up finding a template on the board of supervisors website, which we used and modified for us. We sent it to legal counsel, who okayed it, and then I sent it off to Tracy Riggs yesterday. So she's going on vacation. It needs to be reviewed by county council, but that process is slowly inching forward. And once the board of supervisors approves that tax sharing resolution, that should pretty much be the completion of the annexation process, with the last part that LAFCO has to complete. Clean California The grant is moving forward. Louie and I and the staff have been working on the submittals for the public restroom company so they can start manufacturing the restroom. Admin staff picked out the colors of the restroom last week, and Louie's working through the utility and the rest of the design specs for the bathroom. Rachel submitted our District of Distinction application yesterday, so
4:30. Thank you, John.
Yeah. So that will be another next to our transparency certificate. It'll be a very important. There's a lot that goes into it. I would highly recommend that the board look at the application that's required in order to be designated as a District of Distinction.
And it should get awarded to us at the annual conference.
So there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, obviously the work for putting in the application that Rachel did, but the district in itself, the stuff that we have to hit in order to obtain that is quite expensive. So it is impressive for us to be able to accomplish that. The last thing that I have is I had a meeting with the Sierra Nevada Conservancy last Friday regarding a couple of grants that they had. They had a really quick turnaround, one for land conservation and recreation tourism grant. We thought that they might be easy money because they released it on the 6th and it was due on the 20th. So we figured sometimes it's going to be to get rid of the funds. I had a meeting with our representative. Unfortunately, it wasn't that way. They've been working with some projects for quite a while that are pretty much tailored for that. So they had alluded to the fact that not to apply for the program. However, the reason I'm mentioning this is that he made a comment that the state is requiring that all of this money that they've allocated to places like the Sierra Nevada Conservancy for grant, if they don't allocate that money to be spent, the state is requesting all the funds to be returned because the state's in a deficit. And so money that they're not using that they've already been given, the state's requesting back. So it's kind of, I feel we've been really nice, like it's been really nice. The economy is doing really well. We saw the benefits of recreation grants that the state hasn't seen since the 80s. And now we're moving back into a deficit. So I'm assuming that the recreation grants are going to be a thing of the past for a while, which is unfortunate. But at the same time, I feel very happy that we were as aggressive as we were when they were available. And again, that's just my assumption based off of the conversation. But anyways, that's my
answer. We have a lot of money to spend already.
So yes, we do.
All the more reason how wonderful it is when you guys just jump on these things when you see them, because you never know if they're going to be there next month or not.
I just want to thank you, Rachel, for helping me
get into
all that.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So
then, you're all educated.
I'm intimidated. Yes. I am not a sexual harasser.
Yeah, that's unless anybody has any questions. That's okay.
Right. Questions for any gender.
Alrighty, Louie, let's do the operations report.
All right. Well, this last month was a good one with all the weather and everything we had going on, but we had a couple of things that did go right for us. We had our transmission line coming from Big Creek Water Treatment Plant to McKinley was cleared by Moore Brothers. They came in and masticated that whole easement for us, so now we can actually access our water line. That whole area was jackstrawed with down trees from the bug kill that long ago and just overgrown with brush and everything. So getting that cleaned up, we can actually get in there if we ever have a problem. We do have some vaults that are actually out there and a couple hydrants. So now they're all accessible. The roads opened up. And so that was a pretty big project for us to get that completed. We installed a couple new flow meters out at the water treatment plants. Well, I'll take that back at Second Grody. We're getting ready to do Big Creek once we get out of the tunnel outage. The old flow meters, they still work, but calibrated them. Their variance was off too much to actually get an accurate calibration on them. So we switched out to newer models of those, and the guys installed those. So they're working, and they're going to go plug into our Historian that we did get installed last year. So the Historian is where we can actually pull data and pull reports on the flow meter. So how many gallons are going out, what was the highest month, what was the highest day, that kind of stuff off this, off these flow meters. And so it's another big step in the right direction for us, since everything is going towards data. State wants to know everything we do to the T. So it's good stuff. Again, weather, we're making it pretty well through it for the most part. We are getting really, really close to our reservoir. We have made a couple phone calls. We've called the dam people, and we're getting ready to send out a letter for a variance to actually possibly sandbag the spillway to get an additional 2 feet of freeboard on that. We have, as of Greg this morning, said 4 vertical feet in there, and it will be at the spillway. So we did make that conversation, or that call, made that conversation with them. And we just gonna submit the letter probably today about it. And then we did call the state on the wastewater side of it as well, and talk to them about, you know, just where we're at with that. And, you know, we can't use the spray fields because of the rain. We have to wait 24 hours before we can use the spray fields if it's not rain. So, you know, we're trying to just get guidance and everything from them. They kind of gave us some stuff off the record, which I'm not going to repeat, but so we do got guidance. We have reached out. We're not there yet, but we're getting really, really close. And to let you know, that pond was empty. It was not full. It was empty when we started this year.
So. Pond one up here?
No, reservoir number two.
Oh, well.
So, and if anybody knows, we had that brand new spillway, or that flume done, you know, and it goes right down that. It goes into the local creek, which goes right into Pine Mount Lake, which, as of right now, we're using for treated drinking water. Hetchy did notify us that they're going to stop a little bit early, so I believe it's, I don't know what day, I think it's like the end of this month, or end of this week. Thursday. Yeah, end of this week, we'll be going, they'll be running water, we'll probably be able to use it next week. So that's a good thing there for the guys to get done with that, because it's starting to be pretty daunting on them over there. And just, they have 4 staff members that run that, so it's done very well. They used to have split shifts. This year, they still come in pretty early, but they're not working in later in the evening. But it's still, it's a task for those guys to make that happen over there. So kudos to them on that. And then, let's see, we've had, our projects are pretty much all stalled. The generator project, all of them are installed at, you know, all our lift stations and Highlands Pump Station. They got the new one installed into Big Creek, but they're waiting for some components on the electrical side to get that tied in all the way, so it's not operational. And they're kind of just waiting for that to come in, and then they'll move on to the second grubby. But that project is going pretty well. A few hiccups on the paperwork side and stuff of that nature, but not on our end, contractors in, but we're making it happen. And then everything else is pretty much stalled because of the weather. So we're just kind of waiting in limbo and all that. The plant, asphalt plant, should be open back up in April, and then we can start moving forward with all that. Let's see. I attended the OES meeting for storm damage last Thursday, and haven't had any time to discuss with Pete about it yet, but you'll hear if we decide to go with it or not. But it is a pretty big process, and so we got to weigh our options on that to see if it's worth all the paperwork for that. Anyways, that.
I think you can see by the graphs that the significant inflow and infiltration, and we have to do everything that we can possibly do to get that under control. It could be a very expensive project. It could be a fairly easy fix, but that's going to be an easy fix compared to the level of work that we're having to go through now to try to keep everything functioning.
I guess I missed that last month, that the January info was so high.
Mm-hmm.
Geez.
What was it?
What are we getting now?
Well, as Greg puts it, they're not operating the plant. The plant's operating them pretty much right now. We're still in, you know, compliance going on the back end, but we're running, I think he said yesterday, it was like 340 gallons a minute. And let me just tell you, our plant is rated at like 400 gallons a minute, you know, wet weather, but, and, or is that, no, that's dry weather. Anyways, with what it's running at right now, everything's 100%. So we lost a blower due to some power issues, and we actually got it back online. We thought it was a serious problem. It ended up not being that bad. One of the guys just had to go in there and actually diagnose it. And so Steve and Matt, are one of our maintenance mechanics, and then our IT was out there, and they figured it out. We got it back online. But all these things run at 100% when the plant's doing this. So, you know, that's just with rain event. So if we're looking at
it. Better the rain.
What was that?
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
But yeah, no, we're running Saturday night, Sunday night, 340 gallons a minute. So,
which is putting that water into a reservoir that is likely to overtop, and we've got to get off that reservoir as our drinking water source. And we need to, you know, obviously, we need to go all hands on and put that INI as the absolute number one priority of everything that we do, because it's going to be really obvious to the state that we just sat back and let it go without addressing it, because it's an issue, and I don't know where it's coming from, but hopefully we've got some data and stuff that we can look at.
I did pull some data on it, some reports of just our flow meters of our stations that have it. And when you look at the rain events compared to non-rain events, it's pretty instant when that happens. So my assumption at that point is it's either going to be somebody's gutters or it's coming in from the top. Because it doesn't wait 2 days after it starts to rain. It's literally instant. As soon as it rains, you get that inflow goes up. And so I was out actually today because there's a section on Elderberry that's really, really soft. We put our cones out there, even though it's not our road. But it's you can tell where that road's alligatored, and the water's getting in around our, we have a sewer line right there. And right. It's really, really bad. So I popped some manholes to check to see, you know, making sure everything was okay on our end. On that part, make sure nothing was coming in. But I noticed a couple of the barrels on some of the manholes had seepage coming around where they put the ram neck when they set these cones or the barrels to the cone. And you can see where some of it was coming in. And it's not a lot, but we have, you know, 600 to 800 manholes out there. So
that's up.
So, anyways.
But anyway, we know we got a problem, and we'll you'll see a project in front of you soon.
Like when you think about it, like during the busiest holiday weekend, we do about 140 gallons a minute.
Wow.
Wow. I would just like to thank your team, and specifically Sean, who, when we called in and said we had no power out in our area on Saturday, no water out in our area Sunday, came out. Oh, the hydrant that PG&E had knocked off or something, and had
Shane.
Fixed and back within 30, 45 minutes or something.
Yeah, we have had a couple incidents. They hit the one at the park by the library, and they ran that one over. But again, I say it's all them on the driving, but at the same time, a lot of our hydrants are the old school ones, and we cannot buy risers for them. And I know these guys know about them. Some of them are literally 6 inches out of the ground. And so some of them, they're horrible. That's just one thing that we need to look at, you know, another project, another thing, and slowly start changing these hydrants out so they are actually adequately above ground for these guys, for us. But, you know, you start getting that low to the ground, you're going to hurt back, you're going to hurt anything you can. So I'm not saying that out loud. Don't, you know, you have no time off. Anyway, so I don't know. They turned onto a driveway and they took that hydrant and pretty much took it off top. So not all the time did they break, but they did a good number on that one. But I will pass that along.
One of the neighbors called, my next door neighbor, who then called me. It's like, We do have power. Do you have power? It's water. We just got our power back and then we just water back.
I'll tell you, it's pretty funny because we get people that call us saying, we don't have any water. We're like, no, you should have water. Well, I'm not there. My friend called me and said, so it's just funny how it happens. Like, oh, we're wow. down south or wherever, but we have no water. It's like, well, it doesn't really matter, I guess. But wait, no, you should have water. Did you check? They're like, no, we're not even home. Like, okay. But it's fun.
We have no
water. Yeah. No, it's fun. It's good stuff.
All right. So, ready to move on?
Sure.
So we need to approve the consent calendar, or is that done? That's part of the agenda thing?
No, we want to hit
it. Okay. So, can we give a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I move to approve the consent calendar.
Second. All right. Yeah. So, all in favor of approving the consent calendar, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. I'm ready. Now we will move on to, we have no old business, but I will. We have previously agreed to an adjust from 7 down to 7C. Adoption of a resolution approving the environmental documents for the Groveland Community Services District to grow improvements project.
Yeah, it's the biggest part of the packet. It's not. It is the environmental documents and mitigated negative declaration that makes this packet go from the size that you have in your hand to 350 some odd pages, and that is. The work of Crawford and Bowen, and they've helped us out on our other projects, the secret documentation. They've prepared a mitigated negative declaration. I've reviewed that, the pertinent sections of that document, and I'm recommending that we adopt the mitigated negative declaration, issue a notice of determination. So, it's okay. I'll turn it over to Travis just to kind of walk through the document.
Sure. Thank you. Good morning again. My name is Travis Crawford. I'm an environmental planner with Crawford & Bowen Planning. Really appreciate the opportunity working with the district on this project. It's good to see some familiar faces again. I think last time I was here was August for the trails project. So it's good to see you all again. So I'm going to go over just briefly the environmental compliance process, the next steps, and then the district can open it up for a public hearing. So just a quick review of the project. The drought improvement project would take place in the communities of Groveland, Big Oak Flat, and Pine Mountain Lake. It involves installing 2 groundwater wells, a new water storage tank and distribution lines, relocating the water supply treatment system, and improving the water supply intake system. So the purpose of the project is, of course, to ensure adequate water supply during drought conditions. So the district is required to comply with the Environmental Quality Act, also known as CEQA. So for this project, as Peter mentioned, we prepared a mitigated negative declaration, which is the appropriate level of documentation for this type of project. So we took a look at all 20 environmental topics, ranging from air quality to biology and all the way down to water quality. To support the analysis, we had a biological and cultural resources survey done. No protected resources were found, but there's still some standard pre-construction surveys that will be required in order to protect biological resources. But that's a standard measure basically in all of your projects. So based on the analysis of the CEQA document, it was concluded that there were no significant impacts. As such, the document was, or a notice of availability of the document was published in the Union Democrat on February 10th, and the document was circulated to the State Clearinghouse the same day for a public review period of 30 days. So that went from February 10th to March 13th, yesterday. So during that 30 days, the district received a comment letter from the State Water Resources Control Board. They had noted some clarifications that were needed in the CEQA document to more accurately kind of reflect the project description. So we responded to those comments by making minor revisions in the CEQA document, and those are in what's called the final CEQA document, which is the document that you're adopting today. So after that, we will get the we did also receive two other comment letters that I received yesterday, one from Caltrans, one from the Regional Water Board. Both of those letters were basically form letters. They outlined, they said, hey, we have jurisdiction over this area for certain things. These are the regulations you have to follow. So it's all the typical things the district would follow anyway. So there was no response required for those. So that brings us to today. At the conclusion of this presentation, the district can open up for public hearing. We'll take any comment. You can close it and then take action. And then following that, we'll work with you to get the notice of determination filed with the county. And that will effectively end the CEQA process. So I'm available to answer any questions. And thanks again for an opportunity to work with the district on this project.
Yeah, so is it possible for you to summarize the mitigation measures that were included?
Sure, it's mostly for biology, and it was pre-construction surveys for northwestern pond turtle, nesting bald eagle, western red bat, and just nesting birds in general. So it's because those species are known to occur in the area. None were found during the surveys, but because habitat exists and they could move onto the site, Fish and Wildlife requires these pre-construction surveys. So, within 30 days of construction, you send a biologist out there, they sweep the site, they say all is good, and you move forward. And then there was one mitigation measure for cultural resources, and that's just a standard protection measure. If something is found during construction, then these are the steps that you take.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now just a procedural question. Did we need to agendize a hearing?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, it's standard for cities and counties, depending on the project and the level of environmental review. It depends on your process. If our process called for a notice public hearing, we would do it as a public hearing. It's just the requirement is that it be publicly considered, that the board publicly consider and take action on. I'm not your legal counsel, but I'm been through it.
Any other questions, comments?
I guess I will move.
Well, we need to take public comment.
We still have public comment. Janice?
Travis, just to let you know, we have no one in the seats in the room.
Oh, okay.
No one online except for Janice.
Except for me. Okay, yeah. And that's fine. You've opened the public meeting portion, so now you can close it and move forward.
So I will move to what is the correct terminology, I guess. To adopt resolution number 13-2023, a resolution of the Board of Directors of Groveland Community Services adopting the mitigated negative declaration for the Groveland Community Services District Drought Improvement Project.
I'll second.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Josh. That's a great job.
Thank you. We'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Sorry. All in favor of Bob's.
Have to read the whole thing.
Say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Say
nay.
Which
is approved. We'll move it back.
We'll get that all signed and sent off to you.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Now on backing up to 7A, adoption of a resolution awarding a consulting services agreement to NDS Consulting to perform a water and sewer rate study.
Yay. Yeah, that was fast. It wasn't a lot of review required. We sent it out to, what was the number of firms? Nine? So give us a...
I would say it was around nine, and then it was also got posted on the RFP clearinghouse on CSDA.
And we received one proposal from MBS. That's always a concern. Just sometimes you make too complicated of a scope, or something's confusing or whatever, and consultants don't respond. But I confirmed with a couple of them that would normally respond that they're just too busy. They've just got too many projects going on. They don't have the staff to spread out. They've got short timelines.
We don't want them to do it if they don't have the staff.
So then we sat down to make sure that the MBS scope was what we thought it should be, and that it met the requirements of the request for proposals, and that they had a good approach to it, and they did. They seem to always do that for us. They know us well. They've done a lot of recent work for us. And their proposal was for the base work, which is the studies, was within our budgeted amount, with a little bit of contingency on top of that. However, the public outreach component of the work that they proposed, we hadn't really contemplated when we put the budget together. We kind of thought that we were going to produce the same work that we did before, go through the same level of internal effort to do some public outreach documents and everything else, and determined that it worked out for us last time, but it's a lot of work, and we found that there was a lot of things that we could have done a lot better, and we had hoped to be able to get some professional expertise to be able to do it. Because it's outside of our budgeted amount, and we're being really careful with our cash, we're proposing to seek board approval of the entire budgeted amount. And we may pick components of their public outreach proposal, that best suit the rate study. We can get into the rate study a little bit and see if it's going to make major revisions to our existing rate program. And if it is, then the probability that we're going to need some assistance with outreach goes up. And we may come back to the board, just depending on the complexity and what we feel is the need going into the Prop 218 notice and all that. We may look at a budget amendment to add the outreach piece, or at least to get bits and pieces of it. But we'll get as much done as we can for the amount that we have in the budget. Jim, anything to add to that?
No, I was just saying, we did reach out to, once we got the, or we were putting together the submittal and looking at the cost proposal for the engagement section of it, there were a couple of items like their educational flyer and the Proposition 218 public notice fee, because they just gave us a lump sum. So we had asked them, we thought these might be the two things that we would definitely want them to do, and got requested that they individually price those items out, and they did. So the educational flyer was $3,750, and the public 218 public noticing fee was $3,100. That's the only thing that developed since we.
What was their total? What was the total engagement?
It was like 40,000. It was over half the cost of the actual, and it wasn't. They had two small items, and then like just the chunk of it was $40,000. So we asked them to break out what these two things would cost. So yeah, it was very expensive, which is difficult, because I know when we were discussing this last time, that was one of the Pete was saying, the take back from our last one, we really need to get a professional, engaged with the community, get the flyers, have it, because I don't know if you read the proposal, but they have like a hotline you can call. There's a website that gets created. I mean, it's a very extensive engagement process that you're getting for that amount of money. But
they were the $44,100 that they had included is the total estimated expenses for that work was really taking the whole thing out of our hands. Mm-hmm. We're feeding information in,
right,
but they're doing the whole thing, you know, arranging all the meetings and, you know, just full on engagement process, which
that would be nice.
We need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just,
and that is, I mean, bearing in mind, that is actually for two.
Yes.
To 18 hearings and proceedings. I mean, that's water and sewer. So right. 22,000 apiece, which is still a lot of money. But yeah. Yes. As you say, if there was, well, wash that bridge up when we get to it or something.
Yeah, we may be able to we may be able to work within their you know, $73,650 for the base studies, and then, you know, have them do you know, a flyer and some other pieces that really help out and make some suggestions to us on things, because we don't have a really engaged community until the night of the public hearing. Mm-hmm. You know, all you really get is a bunch of banter on social media that you're not gonna fix those people in any kind of public engagement process. All you're gonna do is help give some people that are paying attention and want to know, you're gonna give them some more information. But the trolls, the people that are going to be there every single time bashing it, no matter what they hear, they're going to be there anyway.
So in this resolution, am I modify it to say that we're accepting or that we're approving the entire budget item? Because it doesn't actually say that. It says this is a one. Is that a separate entity?
It's paragraph.
It isn't. I mean, there is no paragraph.
I think you can modify it, and then I'll add whatever.
Or is it just a revision? Okay, so I will move to adopt resolution 12-2023 finally. A resolution of the Board of Directors of the Building Group Services District awarding a consulting services agreement with NBS Consulting to perform a water and sewer rate study, with the additional provision that we are approving the full budget item of $80,000 for this, despite the fact that isn't the core. Don't go on. That. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're approving the full budget item of $80,000.
I'll second. Let me ask the motion maker, because I really like, I like to capture any changes to an action that, because the resolution will be the thing that stands out for future generations. Not that it really matters on the consulting agreement that much, but can we add that additional language to the now therefore be it resolved, the action that's in the resolution stating that?
Yes.
So to adopt the resolution 12-2023. Awarding a consulting service agreement to NBS Consulting to perform a water and sewer rate study in the amount not to exceed the amount budgeted in the
amount not to exceed $80,000.
Not to exceed $80,000. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Any conversation? Any other description on it?
Opposition,
we have any public people?
Oh, Janice has got her hand up.
So there she is.
Public Janice.
Hello, everybody. I just want to say that I agree with having them do whatever they can to help the public understand why we would need to do this. There's so much going on social media right now about how the rate increases because of the new center down off of Ferretti, and you know, it's just a mess out there. People are posting all kinds of stuff. So to be able to have one spot that somebody can go to that is not and have it come from someone that's not associated with GCSD or doesn't work for GCSD is a brilliant idea. So thank you for having them offer that to us.
I can unanimously just ask for the votes here, right? All in favor of the motion?
Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. I say aye, by the way. I didn't say that a lot of levels.
John, could you second that item?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Alrighty, so that moves us on to ended my video. Okay. Agenda item 7B, designating a board member to serve on the Tuolumne Danforth Regional Water Management, JPA, Board of Directors, and to appoint a staff member to Tuolumne Danforth Watershed Advisory Committee.
Well, this is all in your packet, and we've been back and forth. Spencer, thank you very much for spending your couple years on that.
I resigned.
You retired from IRWIP.
So this is IRWIMP we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, IRWIMP is now two separate entities, you know, in reality. It's the Watershed Advisory Committee that has the NGOs on it and, you know,
and then the JPA.
And then the JPA that makes the decisions. Because the WAC just votes by consensus, the Watershed Advisory Committee, and the JPA is actual voting. And the JPA requires that it's an elected official.
Right.
The alternate can be a staff member. Where the WAC, it can be a member of staff as the primary.
And may I add too that T.S. Irwin really gives some great presentations on the items that they're going to vote on, that the JPA votes on. The WAC is a very conversational organization. Talk, they banter back and forth, they argue about stuff, but when it's done, it's presented to the JPA in a magnificent format, and a great presentation is normally given. And so it's pretty easy to vote. They're a great organization. They really are. Something else about being a member of the JPA and of T.S. Irwin is you got to look at the fingerprint that GCSD has out there now. You got anybody on the Community Service District Board of Directors, Pete? Aren't you on that board?
On the, the chapter? Yeah, I'm the president. Yeah.
And don't we have somebody on the Tuolumne County Board of CSDs? And we have somebody that's Janice is trying to get onto the what's that?
LAFCO.
LAFCO.
That'll happen.
Bob is on SDRMA. We, as a small district, have a magnificent footprint out there. We're involved in a lot of things, and it helps us. I think Louie just put out a bunch of generators that we got from T.S. Irwin, didn't we? Yeah, see, so we help other people in T.S. Irwin, and T.S. Irwin helps us. It's a magnificent organization for whoever gets to do it. It's a worthwhile enterprise. It's a worthwhile expenditure of your time. I got run out of time. I'm chasing three kids around. I'm not going to make excuses, but I think I just did. But anyway, it's a good organization.
There you go.
Thank you. It's a great organization for whichever board member gets involved with. And you meet a lot of great people, too, from these other organizations, the tribe, Calaveras County, Sonora City. It's a great organization. It's a great organization. It's worthwhile being involved with. I'm going to leave my pontificating with that.
Are you trying to sell her on the deal?
Yeah. No, I'm just telling whoever wants it on the deal. Whoever's getting it, I just have a lot of good things to say about T.S. Irwin. I don't want anybody to think I'm leaving there because it's not a good organization. It is a good organization, and it helps us. And we get to help others.
Sorry.
I'm having
sidebar conversations.
I'm through.
About this item, we made the assumption going into the discussion today that John was too busy to to take this on. He's willing to welcome if that's something that you're not wants to do it.
Yeah, that's great.
If you want to do it, Bob, you can do it.
I don't know. I know. I think it's a. No, I have enough things.
I think you do.
Overscheduled at this point.
Okay.
The recommendation was Nancy as the JPA primary and myself as alternate, and Rachel as the WAC primary and me as the alternate there.
If they both want to do it,
I will probably let you want to just take it, or even I can become a backup then too, or something. Just
sure,
because
that'd be good. You could be a primary. Well, there's one.
Yeah, if I can't make it, then.
But one of the things, like, what is our meeting schedule? Because I never did.
Monthly, Wednesday, the day after our meeting. Yeah, so second tomorrow.
Because I haven't actually
looked. It's usually the next week.
How many times we end up.
Yeah, it's the second Wednesday, right?
Right.
Or is it so sometimes it winds up being the same week. Sometimes it winds up being the following week.
They are good communicators. They will tell you, whoever is lucky enough to get this position, you will be communicated with. So there's no lack of knowing when the boards are. You're going to get the whole packet. But if you want to print it out, you got to take it yourself.
You can get it printed here.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, if John wants to do it, I'll gladly you can just change it for me.
Are we doing just the JPA or both?
When does the WAC?
It's
just to apply.
It's an hour before the JPA.
Oh, same day. Same day.
Just the JPA, I would think. I'm trying to get out of here. No, it's going to take a lot of involvement from me, no matter what, just because I have the history. I'm not saying I want to jump in as the primary, but I will be there as the alternate for whoever. I was looking at it as a learning experience. I know, you know, Jen, we just keep piling stuff on everybody's plate. And I know that the WAC can be a little bit, I think you said it correctly, they like to talk about things.
It's conversation.
It will be 2 hours of conversation every single time.
But you get everybody's point of view, which is way important.
Okay. So what are we deciding? John Armstrong as the primary? For the JPA.
Yeah.
Rachel as the primary for the WAC, and Pete as the alternate for.
So you're just substituting John for Nancy in the recommended motion.
Guamie County Utility District, Guamie Utility District, Board of Supervisors. That's where it's at.
Wait, so Nancy just isn't involved at all now?
She.
She's president.
I can be.
No, she's not the alternate either. So.
Do you have to have an alternate on record?
Yes, it's either, and it can be either. I'm just thinking that it's pretty easy for me to be an alternate when somebody can't be there. Because the more people we have involved, the more everybody, the more people are involved in the discussion to get to know the, you know, you got to keep everybody up to speed. So it just,
Well, my point is, would it be more appropriate to have Nancy as the primary for the WAC instead of a staff member, instead of Rachel, if she wants to participate? I mean, if she's going to get involved in, I don't know if that's, maybe she's going to become the JPA one. I don't know.
That's the big question is, do you want to dedicate that 2 hours a month to?
Well, it just, the question is going to be, how many times am I going to have to go on?
Right.
That was, you know, the one reason I kind of hesitated about even this. Because when I read it, they've got kind of a strict.
They do. You can't miss more than two, but the alternate counts as attendance.
Right. I mean, I not that I even wanted to do it in the first place, but the Wednesday would be, there's at least 2 or 3 months in a year where I have a SDR meeting on the second one.
Yeah.
So right now, I would have.
How bad do you want to do it? So
this month would be
No, it's the third Wednesday. That's why it's the third Wednesday. It's tomorrow.
Oh, it's third Wednesday.
Yeah.
And either way, I had intended to be there for this no matter what. So it's not like if you are selected that you have to make sure that your state is good for tomorrow. So it would just be the
tomorrow would be kind of hard to go if I didn't start next April.
Did you catch that? That it's the third Wednesday?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would be gone on for June for sure.
So in April, it would be the 19th.
Yes.
They do communicate well with Carolyn Mott. She's all the time sending emails about grants.
If I'm reading this correctly, just as an aside,
that's Mark Wiles.
Yes.
Thank you.
I thought that's
so, what
we were saying. So if we did.
So we could have two of them.
If we did John as the primary, Nancy and Pete as the alternate with the JPA. If either one of you want to be primary for the WAC, if not, I can be, and then he can be the alternate for the WAC.
I'll be there at more of them than I was in the past. You know, it's the WAC meets at 11.
Oh,
I'm sorry. No, the WAC meets at 9. The JPA meets at 11.
Oh, okay. So it's both are together.
Yes.
Okay, let me take a stab.
Okay, I'll listen to you.
I'm going to move to appoint Director Armstrong to the primary for the Tuolumne Stanislaus Regional Water Management JPA. To appoint, who's going to be the primary? To appoint Rachel Perlman as the primary for the WAC, and to appoint Peter Campa and Director Mora as alternates to the JPA, and Peter Campa as alternate to the WAC.
Okay.
That's not
one. But it's right.
Is that what we think that's
what we're doing?
Yes.
So that starts at 11 o'clock. It's time for the JPA.
Yeah.
And that's just down at TV.
Yeah. And you're always welcome to come early for the WAC.
Which yeah,
probably will.
You know, might as well.
It pays off to do that.
Yeah. So 9 o'clock.
Okay, so or Bob's 9.
That's a motion.
Yep.
And I second it.
Okay. Any more chitter chatter room?
I'll just make one comment. I just wanted to thank Dennis for the
absolutely.
As you may recall, when we joined the Irwin, but I was not enthusiastic about it based on the feelings we had in the past.
The Station 16
managed to
Yes.
And I want to thank John for stepping up for her because I was willing to do it just because he'd asked if I would. But considering I'm still kind of getting my he's went with all of this stuff anyhow, so I appreciate all that too.
Well, we've got such a big footprint in the state. DCSD, how many years ago? 2017, when I started on here? I think it wasn't as big. Now we've got a big influence, and it comes back to help us, and we can help more people. I just think it's really, really great. We're going in the right direction, folks. It's my opinion for whatever it's worth.
On that, I have the nomination forms and member forms from them, so can I get you guys to fill out your information for you today?
Sure.
John? Where's that hammer? John, I have the member information for their nomination pamphlet. Can you please fill that information out today?
Surely.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
All right. So once again, we can do verbally. All in favor of the motion? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. And then we've got it passed 4-0.
What is this?
Pete was going to tell us what it's
for. Okay.
That was part of the action. Your action approving the mitigated negative declaration allows me to sign that.
Oh, okay. We need to
this
sign
is
it.
Basic. I'll sign it. It's
okay, so this is just for us to all read.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what you just signed up for.
That's what I thought.
Great. All right. I believe we are done. We'll call for adjournment at 11:35.
Thank you very much.